This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 73 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we have Singing Phoenix with a view on lifestyle slavery. Here's your hosts, Woody and Chrissy.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the desk is the lovely Chrissy. How are you?
Hi, Woody. I'm doing terrific. How are you?
I am wonderful tonight. It's just been beautiful out.
I know. I'm hot. But I guess that's not unusual. Well,
and yes, you are, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, I have a friend that I brought to the podcast tonight, Woody. I've known her for quite a few years. Currently, she's known on FetLife by the name Singing Phoenix, but she's had multiple names and multiple evolutions over the years. Woody, I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Singing Phoenix.
Hi, Woody.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing absolutely peachy keen. What about you?
Oh, we're having a great time here. Chrissy, what's her background?
Well, I've known Singing Phoenix for quite a few years from the East Tennessee area. You know, Phoenix, you have such an interesting history and so many evolutions throughout the years. Please, I'll let you tell us.
There's what I call many voices, many rooms. One of my voices is Tassie, who is a rambunctious little. There is a mule. There is a slave. There is a housekeeper. Who you get depends on what the situation is in front of me.
You also have used several different names over the years as you've changed your thinking about your role and your position in the scene. What are some of the names you've used? I know that Phoenix is not the most current. Well, it is the most current, but it's not the one that I knew you as.
I combined two slave names that I had been given before I ever got on FetLife or even poked my head out into the public community, which was Paca Nazarene. It was during this time that I was a formally trained Kajira. That lasted all of about 3 months. Let's see, there was Edigad Shonuk, which is Gaelic for the silver fox. There has been Ite Sion, which was a name that one of my tenures gave me. And there was Ite Ripachip, because my lord tends to call me his nuclear attack sub.
A nuclear attack sub, okay. What I'm hearing through all this is that you identify as a slave, is that correct?
Through the majority of my time in this lifestyle, yes, I have identified as a slave.
How long have you been in the scene or been in the lifestyle?
Power dynamics have been a part of my relationship since around 2004. So right at 11 years.
Okay. I think I've known you probably, 7 or 8 years now. You've had an interesting progression over these years as you've thought about your life and your position in it. You're a very thoughtful woman, and your intelligence is something that I really admire. And I've looked at the essays you have listed on FetLife. They're very well done. One that particularly grabbed me is that you talk about the corruption in MS dynamics, and you've broken that into two essays. It's very much something that resonated with you. I don't really feel that it's discussed much throughout what we consider our kinky world, and particularly through FetLife. I see the opposite, in fact, about how everything is so wonderful. Would you please care to indulge us with a little bit of your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. In the way that I have experienced MS, specifically master-slave, it is not something that is a relationship. It is a dynamic. Now, in order for something to be dynamic, it has to change each of the components into something that it wasn't before, or bring something to light that wasn't hidden before. MS is a dynamic rather than a relationship to me, because I have found that a great many of the times either the slave will use love as a weapon against the master, you know, and the master, because of his love for the slave, will not be able to step in. So there is abusive love on the slave's part, and because there is not love to hold the master's actions in check, there is a corruption of power from the master. And I find that the desire for the power is indicative of a larger chance of there being corruption from the master. It already exists. The only thing that's lacking is the opportunity to manifest. In other words, someone to kneel before him or her. The way that I have found to check that is to negotiate a contract that has a definite beginning and a definite end in front of a neutral third party. This helps to prevent abuses of power from the master and abuses of love from the slave, so that what in essence happens is that there is a symbiotic dynamic that helps each become the best individual that they can become and the best team that they can become.
And this is without love.
This is without love. Love is one of those strange little things. The English word love is very, very limited. You know, there's
yes.
one word, I love peanut butter, I love my dog, I love my parents, I love my spouse. Does this mean that I love my spouse with the same vigor that I love peanut butter?
Right.
Or your sister, brother, or
right.
pet.
Well, the Greeks have four words for love.
What I find develops in a healthy, functioning dynamic is what the Greeks called storge. It is a love born of duty. Whenever I say that I love my house, whenever I say that I love the members of my house, I am saying it with the same level of pride as I say I love my country. It doesn't necessarily mean that I am romantically in love with my country. It means that there's a sense of belonging and that I have a duty to my country, and that love is born of that duty. The duty comes first, then the love follows.
I understand what you're saying. I'm looking at your essay right now, and it's titled Midnight Musings. Third paragraph says, I struggle with love because the moment a master falls in love with a slave, he has lost control of the entire situation. Yet love will not hold his actions in check. He will abuse the power he has been entrusted with. There is a great deal of wisdom in the adage, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I have seen this before in action, and I can only assume that it is difficult, if not outright impossible, for a master to possess honor, the very thing which he wants power over another human life, will corrupt him. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. I have seen dynamics erode because what you end up having is Machiavellian techniques used by the slave. It goes back to the abuse of love from the slave, because people that this has happened to, that I have witnessed this happening to, your jaw would drop. But whenever you take a step back, they want so much to please their loved one that the slave is going, jump, and the master, through his actions, is going, how high, love? Because she then has a carrot, you know, because if he doesn't do what she wants, she will then take away the love. And that's not really love. There's no part of that that is love. That is manipulation. Machiavelli's The Prince has nothing to do with the prince being ruthless. You never want to be the prince. You want to be the prince's advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Because this way, you have a figurehead that will take the fall for you. And you have that figurehead because you don't want to take responsibility for your own actions.
Just like the heads of most countries.
Bingo.
So you're talking about the slave being the manipulative one.
Yes.
What about the master being the manipulative one?
I don't necessarily see it as manipulation. I see it more as corruption. You guys are familiar with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right?
Oh, sure, yes.
Okay. Question. Why was Frodo chosen to be the ring bearer?
Why was Frodo chosen? Because he was innocent? He had no ulterior motives?
And he did not desire the ring.
Yes, he did not. That's true.
He did not. Whenever I personally go looking for a leader, a master, someone to give, for lack of a better term, absolute power within the realms of having that arbiter, you know, with the stipulation of that arbiter, whenever I go looking for someone to give absolute power to, I look for individuals who do not desire absolute power.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
You're writing now in Rambling Thoughts. You're going down this road, and you say, for a master to not become corrupted by power, he must love justice more than power.
That was something that my Lord said. And I can understand it to a point, but I also understand that it's not necessarily that masters are these big, you know, badasses and I have no ethics. I just don't want anybody to know it. They usually start out with the best of intentions. They usually start out with their hearts in the right place. They just do not understand enough about their own limitations, which is that of human nature. They're human beings first. And whenever they go seeking power, they think that they're going to make a positive difference in their subordinates' lives. And what ends up happening is that they get on a power trip that does not stop. And so, in essence, what you have, Frodo has become the Gollum, just by sheer virtue of them being a human being. It's not that masters are evil, malicious entities. It's that they are human beings. And power corrupts without a check or a balance.
There aren't any checks or balances in MS. The only check or balance is release. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, where you look at them and go, you know what, you just crossed the line and I can't deal with this. So to keep the abuse of power from happening, I'm going to walk. And I'm sorry, I would rather not do that. I would rather be able to sit there and go, you know what, you're in breach of contract and we need an arbitration. And the same goes for him. If he looks at me and goes, you know what, you're in breach of contract, we need an arbitration. And it's kind of like a last stitch effort to save the dynamic and to work through the issues before one or the other says, I'm out of here, I'm gone.
I'd like to go on to the next writing that I found that you've put up on FetLife. And again, this is talking about slavery, and this is titled Slavery's Absolute Acceptance. You're talking about how you process what's happening as you're a slave, as an active slave. Do you recall that writing?
I do.
I really like the last paragraph. It reads, slavery is a lesson in trust. Make no mistake, however, I do not have perfect trust or faith in the master. Slavery, instead, is a test of trust within myself. Slavery never fails to prove that I am capable of standing, even when it feels like both my legs are broken. I know that I am capable of enduring and standing. Nobody can ever say that, this whole concept of slavery, which is a relatively new concept in the scene. Maybe, what would you say, Woody, slavery has been introduced, maybe it came about in the 80s, I believe?
It became a little more popular. It certainly wasn't mainstream in the 80s. Some people had practiced MS long before that.
I suppose that's probably true, but I think that it became much more popular, and when the internet came the rage.
Yes, I have to agree with that. And then you're talking into the 90s.
In the 90s. Then everybody all of a sudden decided they were slaves. So any idea what it truly is or means or if it's even possible? I'm having a cognitive dissonance moment every time I'm thinking about slavery now, I'll tell you, Phoenix, because people don't own people. I understand the deep commitment and the deep trust that's there. And it becomes, for me personally, a challenge to challenge myself. How much can I take? How far will I go? What are my boundaries? What are my edges? It's an ongoing test for me. And you write about, in this essay, about acceptance has a synonym, resignation. It doesn't mean that I like the experience, nor does it mean I agree. It means I endure. Is this healthy for us, do you think?
It depends. is this going to go on forever and ever and ever, world without end, amen, until you get fed up with it and start screaming, running down the stairs, screaming, I can't take it anymore? Or is this for a defined period of time? I mean, if there's a specific beginning and a specific end, it starts June 1st of this year, and then it ends December 31st of this year. Be open to renegotiation or to move on your separate ways with that check of an arbiter in place, or have you just handed over everything lock, stock, and barrel with no end?
Well, we often look at it as the old lease renewal of services and that sort of thing.
I don't see many slaves actually doing that. Or if they do have a contract, they don't renew it. It's not touched upon.
I've seen many contracts that have a renegotiation date built into them that are often ignored.
Yes, and by both sides. I think it's very healthy. I think what you're proposing, Phoenix, is very healthy if someone is going to propose to undertake this type of relationship dynamic. I wish more people would do that.
Without the checks and balances, now I can't speak for everybody in the whole wide world, but I know for me personally, the world goes neon gray. And by that, I mean take what you see out in the outside world, the greens in the pretty spring trees. Take the saturation down by about 75% and take whatever it is that you're focusing on and take that up 75%. Which the only way that I can think of to describe that is neon gray, because there are parts of it that are neon and parts of it that are desaturated.
So your focus is moved around into different areas and adjusted.
Yes. The whole point of slavery, to me, is not to live in this state constantly with no end in sight, and the period of testing is intractable. There's no way to stop it. There's no way to take a breather. There's no outlet for your anger and your frustration and your depression and everything else that comes along with having your ethics and your person tested unto destruction.
But the one thing about that is rule number one is take care of the property.
It depends on the master.
We're talking about ethics and we're talking about corruption. You're right. In many relationships, if the slave is allowed to degrade mentally, physically, emotionally, then the damages that are inevitable are going to degrade the quality of service.
And I agree 100% with that. But the point is that you can't make a determination on what that owner is going to be like as an owner until you've knelt before them.
That's true.
And it may be a case where you play well together. The chemistry inside the dungeon is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it makes your heart go pitter-patter, and it makes his heart go pitter-patter, and you end up getting involved in a dynamic with this individual, and you find out that by walking in the owner's world, because in essence that's what we do whenever we enter into a contract with somebody, we're agreeing to walk in their world, not the other way around.
So it's really dangerous to negotiate when you're being powered by NRE.
Yes.
Yes.
People get all hopped up on lust and endorphins and go out and sign a contract that's supposed to be meaningful for a long period of time. How foolish is that?
Again, it helps to have an arbiter there who's able to go, you know what? This was listed as a limit. I don't think so. Or to step in a case where the slave is obviously deteriorating, and to pull the owner aside and go, look, dude, you've got a problem. She needs psychiatric help, or she is not getting her needs met, and it's obvious in her behavior. You need to check yourself before you wreck yourself, and vice versa.
But you know, Phoenix, it seems that in the MS dynamic, and again, I'm going to speak very generally and openly, when anyone questions the fact that there might be a problem, it's not handled well. The master's always right. Remember that, he's always right. And the slave, well, the slave has to do what the master says, right? So how can there be a problem if the master's always right?
Because it's not the slave going up to the master saying, you need to check yourself. It's one of that master's peers that he has agreed to check and balance his power to ensure that he doesn't abuse it. Likewise, the slave has agreed to have that arbiter watch for signs of, I'm doing Machiavellian schemes, I'm scheming.
The strongest person in this relationship is the arbiter. And unfortunately, the community is not full of those people.
Yes, that is very true. That's a weakness within the community.
It is. It's like a board of review. And, you know, there are times if a top dominant master is abusing a soul, then the community, the quote community, may step up and take action. And I've seen this many times. However, it is not their job to do that. They do it for service to save the community and perhaps keep it out of the newspaper for abuses and what have you. But in this case, we're talking about a much more fine grain to where we're talking about emotional stability, physical well-being, mental well-being, and having somebody actually watch those things in the slave to make sure that they're running in check. And so it's quite a job.
And in the master. I mean, abuses can happen from either side of the slash.
And we have seen that too.
Oh, wait a minute. You said abuse.
Yes, I did. Abuses can happen. And I'm not necessarily talking about, I give you over my body for everything you want to do, da-da-da-da, there are no limits, which is kind of ridiculous, but because everybody has limits. Be they, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that because I'm on this medication, oh, and I have this illness and this illness.
Oh, but that doesn't come out when they give you everything carte blanche.
I have seen negotiations gone wrong, and then after the fact, the bottom or the slave or the, you know, whatever is on the right side of the slash run away and scream abuse, run away, scream rape. And that's not what this is about. An owner can only abuse power whenever there's been carte blanche. They can only be guilty of not taking care of the trust that has been given to them. They have misused the lease. They borrowed something, misused it, and then they're going to return it to it in worse shape than what they found it. That's not abuse because they have been given consensually everything. What they have done is abused the power.
Yeah, and nobody's checking it.
And nobody's checking it because, again, these people are running around, I am Grandmaster Uber Lord Leatherbritches.
Oh, I like that.
I am Grandmaster Uber Dummy Dom Leatherbritches, and I am going to attract all of these young submissives who have not had the experience to be fully grounded and don't know what they want, what they don't want, have never had an experience in their life, and I'm going to take and show them. No, actually, dude, you are about ready to make a serious mistake.
Many of these young'uns have never even identified what they are yet.
No, all the women are slaves. Fuck me, tie me, beat me, hurt me. Let me suck your cock.
I keep forgetting
yes,
that.
Let me grovel at your feet. They're slaves, and I just choke.
Yes, but see, the problem is that they have it in their head what that means. And what happens is you get an owner and a slave who thinks that they have the same ideas, and they don't. And so whenever they enter into dynamic with one another, the quote-unquote slave runs away screaming, saying, all y'all people are screwed up in the head.
I've said this on a number of podcasts before. We are men, and we go by the planet Mars, and you are women, and you are under the planet Venus, and we don't speak the same languages.
But Woody, even so, even the best communicators, if you don't know what the fuck you want, how are you going to be able to communicate
right.
it? You're just going to say, yes, sir, whatever you want, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do whatever you want, sir.
And you can have expectations in your head as to what that is, and I have expectations in my head of what that is, and we didn't even come close on the paper.
Paper was down at the grocery store, you know, I mean.
But even if there was paper, we're still at complete odds.
Exactly.
Over what expectations are.
Yes.
Yes, and then somehow or other it lands on the master, because the slave did not adequately communicate what the expectations were. And the master sit there and say, you have no right to expectation. The slave then must shut up, put up, or walk. They have to resign themselves to the situation,
mm-hmm.
or walk.
Recently, we had Master Ron Kay on the cast, and he gave his position about mastery and about the word slave. And he kind of struck it from his vocabulary.
He does not use the word slave. He thinks it should be partner.
I have read that work, and that thing needs to hit kinky and popular. It never will, because it doesn't sit there and give people fluffy bunny.
Exactly.
But as far as the educational, someone who truly has looked within and said, you know what? This is not the way that a healthy relationship functions. Again, we come back to the difference between a relationship, which can last
and fantasy land.
Years and years and years, and a dynamic, which is only supposed to last 3 to 6 months, at least for me. And I have never met somebody who can literally shut off, disconnect, have no expectations, have no sense of desire, have no sense of anything, and not attach themselves to anything outside themselves, including the master, for any longer and still remain healthy.
I agree.
We're in violent agreement.
Yes, and we're going to rock the FetLife world, because, you know, the haters are going to hate, because the ideas we're suggesting are actually outside what's being, quote, in air quotes, accepted in normal MS. We're odd. And I think it's so important that a more rational point of view be presented for discussion. I appreciate all of your thoughts. I'm moving on to the next essay that you've got up called Boundaries and MS. This resonated with me really a lot, Phoenix, because I had open boundaries. I have been always my whole life, let's go here, let's go there, whatever you want to do. Yeah, I'm game. No, it's okay. It's okay. And I started to draw lines and said, wait a minute, I can't do that anymore. This is hurting me. I have to stop. Line, 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 line. And started setting these boundaries, and things fell apart rapidly in my relationship, but that's okay, because the boundaries were important for health reasons. I think everyone should have boundaries, and slaves often do not. They absorb whatever the master has as their boundaries. In this essay, you're talking about how you've grown and how you've learned to develop boundaries, and you're talking about power and control and corruption again. And you said that when a human being does not have boundaries, life becomes chaotic. How do you see this relating to MS?
Basically, these people who say, I absorb my owner's boundaries and he sets them or she sets them, that's fine. Again, if everybody is in agreement, and if these contracts where these boundaries are being absorbed for periods of 3 months, maybe 6 months, before there's another, what I call a round table, where everybody meets as equals to discuss your dynamic, where you see this is going, have you had any trouble, and everybody is talking as equals before you either agree to another contract, another service contract, for another 3, 6 months, whatever it may be, or if you decide to just basically walk at that point.
You're talking about the slave being subjected to internal anarchy as he or she tries to follow the ever-changing boundaries of the master, because they're not in sync with the slave's internal boundaries. Very chaotic. I totally get that. And you're saying that when boundaries are placed in the hands of somebody who's power mad, the good things that the slave means to do will become easily choked out with activities and roles accepted from a place of obligation rather than passion. And
exactly.
I have experienced that firsthand, and I totally agree with that statement. And, you know, I think that your concept of suggesting that anyone entering into any kind of an MS dynamic sit down and do a contract with a third party is so wise. And it's just not done. It's just not.
And that's something that I firmly believe needs to get out there, because if we are going to have people who want to live the fantasy, and I totally get that. You know, I mean,
so do I.
I have learned so much about myself as a human being. I have learned so much about human nature as a whole from the years in abject slavery that I lived, And I would not trade those lessons for anything, even though they came at an astronomical price. But they came at that astronomical price because there wasn't this check, there wasn't this balance, there wasn't this third party. And without that third party, who is external to the dynamic but connected to it, it will deteriorate, in my experience. I mean, I am now on my fourth tenure, 11 years, four tenures. Having that neutral third party that everybody is in agreement with, you know, that, yes, this person can keep me in check. Yes, I give this person consent for the well-being of my slave, for the well-being of my owner. You know, yes, we need that check, and we can go as deep as the owner wants, so long as this third party does not start seeing problems that, because we are so close to the dynamic, we can't see until it blows up in our face.
You've been through some changes in your life, and as you've traveled this road, very distressing things have happened to you along the way. I know you and I have talked about this, and those who know you well know some of the awful things that you've experienced as a slave, and you've decided that now you are a vassal, and you've changed your dynamic strictly to a service. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Please describe vassal for our listeners.
A vassal is part of the feudal system. Much in the same way as you have vassal states for the larger countries, a portion of everything that I make, a portion of everything that I earn, a portion of everything that I am goes to my house, goes to the head of that house, goes to keeping things afloat, goes towards the vision that my Lord has for himself, this community, the household at large. And I have taken an oath of fealty that is lifelong. Now, that does not mean that I have laid down my personage. I have not abrogated my personhood on the altar of some kind of false belief that, you know, my Lord is above his human nature. It gives me the chance to have a relationship with my leadership and not have to shut down emotionally, shut down mentally, shut down spiritually, and have no expectation, no attachment. I am completely and totally free as a vassal to reach my goals. Because whenever I reach my goals, it brings honor to my Lord, and he gets a larger portion because I have reached goals. I have, you know, gone back to school, finished up the education. I have, you know, I am far healthier mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically than I was whenever he first found me.
Phoenix, what you're describing to me is so much like MS in many, many dynamics. The slave does the same thing for the household to make her master look better or his master look better and be stronger and to help the household. I don't understand the difference between vassal and slave.
Because as a slave, I lay down my person. I am a human being, but I no longer have rights, responsibilities, goals, dreams, aspirations of a person. I am a meat-powered work mule. And I don't even get to choose what I work towards. You know, whereas with my Lord, he sits there, winds me up, and goes, go make me proud. Points me in a general direction and says, go make me proud. And that's exactly what I do. Whatever brings me passion, I am able to say no to all of the other extraneous things because I have that burning yes that is the vision that he has shared with me and that I have been allowed to incorporate into my own vision. See, he does not lead me by, I am the end-all be-all and you are just to comply with my wishes. No, he expects a level of give and take that as a slave I don't possess. As a slave, I comply. As a vassal, I am committed.
I see the difference. I understand what you're saying. But I feel an argument coming on.
She's sitting there. She's kind of rumbling.
I feel an argument coming on, yes. And this is just discussion. A lot of slaves, they comply, but their master is not going to ask them to do anything that the master really knows they don't want to do. Really? You know, it's nice. You're a nice little slave. I want some eggs, and I want them at 2 o'clock, and I want them scrambled with cheese on the side. And that's not a big deal. You're not asking anybody to make any big life changes or do anything really difficult. So, I don't know, maybe that's just playing at master and slave? What do you think?
To me, that would not feed the slave, because I see slavery as a journey of self-discovery. I do not do it for a relationship. I do not do it long-term. I refuse to do it long-term. I've done it long-term, and it just about sent me 6 feet under. My life had become that anemic.
Phoenix, you were saying you don't do it long-term. How do you determine the term?
Because I know from past experience that within 3 months, the world goes a neon gray, and anywhere from 6 to 9 months after that, I become, if it does not let up, it's a struggle for me to survive.
So that goes back to the NRE that we talked about earlier. You know, as soon as the NRE shine wears off of it, then it's time for something new.
And reality comes in.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the marker for you after that amount of time?
Yes, but I have absolutely no problem going at a negotiating table at the end of 3 months or 6 months, renegotiating everything, make sure that everybody, you know, is on the same page, and doing it again.
With the same individuals?
With the same individual.
Okay.
So that's a lease renewal.
Right, it's a lease renewal. It's just my terms are a little bit shorter than your year long.
Well, okay, it's a lease renewal. You know, some people have monthly leases, you know.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, while we're still talking tonight, about slavery and intelligent disobedience. And this is something that you and I both have agreed upon many times across FetLife, across the boards. And we have kind of been the lone voices on this. Would you care to talk about that?
Sure. Okay, we started out, the structured lifestyle takes its roots and first started, from everything that I understand, around about World War II. All the individuals were coming home, they missed the structure, and so leather got started from the returning veterans from World War II.
Yeah, Guy Baldwin was on just recently here, and he talked about the first generation leathermen, which is really an amazing story.
That was episode 66. If you get a moment, listen to it. You'll really enjoy it.
Okay, so we started out returning home from World War II. One of the things that World War II also gave us was the concept that a soldier, if a sergeant looks at a private and says, shoot this individual, and they've surrendered. White flags, their guns are down. They have completely and totally given up. Sergeant turns to the private, says, shoot them. And the private does it. The private executes the order. The private is the one guilty of a war crime instead of the sergeant. A soldier is expected to disobey to the point of mutiny, an illegal command. Intelligent disobedience, if we are capable of teaching a dog, a seeing eye dog, or a guide dog, the concept of intelligent disobedience to save its handler from walking out in front of a car, look at the size of a dog's cranium and look at the size of ours. Don't you think that we have a moral obligation to ensure the safety if there is a problem that the owner doesn't see? Because sometimes we see things long before they do, especially in groups of multiple slaves, because we will talk among ourselves before we will bring it up to them for fear of, we don't want to be perceived of as a problem slave.
That's
so
true.
So we tend to talk freely among ourselves, and whenever, you know, Master Dommy Dom comes in, we turn into almost entirely different people because they have the ability to punish us. They control the resources. That is what dominance is, zoologically speaking. They control the resources. So why would we not be all mealy-mouthed as soon as they walk in the room?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. What can I do for you, sir?
Exactly. Meanwhile, we're sitting over here thinking, oh, my God, I hope that my chain sister gets back really soon from her date with her man, because I don't know how long I can keep him occupied. This is an example.
Let me jump in the middle of that one. So why then are, and I'm not saying you, why are they in that relationship if they're going, how can I put up with this much longer sort of thing? That's borderline abuse. That is certainly distaste.
It is.
It's time to call in the arbiter at that point and say, hey.
Yes, it is. But I have seen it.
Oh, we all have.
Well, you know why they don't? Because as long as they can keep the other person, whoever it is, master, mistress, whoever, happy enough, they get good sex. They get fed. They get fed somehow. Maybe not sex. Maybe food. It might be whatever. But that's what it is. And it is manipulation.
It's the pain versus pleasure scale.
Yes.
And I say pain in a bad way, not in a good way.
Very much so. You talk about in this essay that you've got up, Intelligent Disobedience, you mention, as to a slave not having the right to say no, that's horseshit. A slave always has the option of saying no. And yes, that she has the option and the right to say goodbye and leave the relationship. And I think a slave has the right to say no at other times too, meaning, no, that's going to hurt me in a bad way. We need to look at this from another perspective. Or somebody commented, slaves do not cease to be human beings when they choose to adopt slavery to another. As human beings, of course they have the right to refuse. The choice to submit would have no value without the right to refuse. It has no value. Why would you want anybody just throwing themselves at you? You want somebody with some power and some strength behind them. I wouldn't want somebody submitting to me and trying to be my slave if they were just a little weaselly worm.
And that's true. You know, I mean, I'm coming at it from a very hard-lined, you tell me no, and you will be sent away. I've heard masters say that.
I have too. I've seen it.
And that's okay. See, here's the thing. As long as people have given informed consent, and this is my problem with a lot of these situations, is that I do not believe that there is enough information even available to the master or to the slave for them to give informed consent. It's not that they're intentionally hiding. It's that, you know, you get somebody who's a newbie and is going through newbie frenzy and thinks, I just need a master. Any master will do. And so you get this Lord Leather Britches dummy dom who's already three-fourths of the way corrupt. And then you get this little newbie kneeling before him, and he just went corrupt. Schmeagle just turned into Gollum.
And it happens to those so-called masters that are more experienced, too.
Oh, absolutely. And it happens to the slaves, too. But they become Machiavellian rather than Gollum. They become Machiavelli.
Because corruption works on both sides, slave and master.
Exactly. We're human beings first. And human beings mean we have strengths and we have weaknesses.
Well, I think that comes with the expression that I've been throwing around a lot lately. Own your shit. Do the work.
Exactly.
And figure out who you are. Figure out what trips your triggers and why before you start down this path or you're headed for a crash and burn, you and your partner.
Well, see, here's another thing as far as that intelligent disobedience goes. I have a problem with masters who look at their slaves and say, you never lose your innocence because you cannot possess honor. All honor that you have comes to you from me. Now, I'm sorry. Whenever I die and I am standing before whatever God there is or gods, and my behavior is put, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff, the lambs from the goats, it's not going to be my master who is standing there giving an account for my actions. It's going to be me on my deathbed and at the end of the day. If I'm not okay with what I am doing, then that's on me. I have to own it. Because what I do not own, I cannot change.
If there's a desire to change, some people refuse to acknowledge there's any need for change.
Well, here's the thing. We all live on this planet, and we're all governed by the laws of physics. And then we have the local laws that trump some things that you may have agreed on.
Well, Phoenix, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. It's really been a pleasure, and I hope that we get the opportunity to do it again.
Absolutely. Anytime. I sure do appreciate y'all's time. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to episode 73 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we have world-famous Cleo Dubois.